Thank you. And finally, Elizabeth.
I think that Mandy's right. We do have a built-in support already for this in our schools, but it depends on having enough funding in our schools to be able to carry these things out, and that's a really important distinction, and I'm glad that you brought that up. Otherwise, I think, you know, our schools, many of them have already taken positive steps. I know that at our high school in Hayward, they finally stopped selling soda and candy bars in the vending machines. Because there were just kids walking around with these giant jugs of Mountain Dew all the time, and that's actually quite harmful. I also think if we want kids to be able to be to play outside and run around and hang out with their friends, we need to have safe neighborhoods. And so a lot of that falls to law enforcement and things like that. And again, if we cut budgets, we don't have the people we need to help people feel safe in their own neighborhoods. So I think that rather than creating an obesity department, what we can do is focus on things we already have, and instead of cutting funding from these, put funding back into them so that they can do the jobs that they're supposed to do. The other thing that I think Jim said was about, or somebody said, getting parents involved. We put a lot of emphasis on our teachers and on our law enforcement to make sure that our kids are healthy, make sure that our kids learn what they need to do, and I rarely ever hear parents being criticized in this mix. Well, we've got some families out there that are very dysfunctional for many different reasons, but we need to look at the causes of these things, and if it's a home life situation, we need to be able to intervene.
All right, thank you. Well, that concludes the questioner portion of the forum, and now we'll turn to questions from our audience. How are we going to do this? Do we have a microphone, or are we going to bring those questions up? Okay, we're holding. All right, so Melissa and Mandy will be walking around with a microphone, so if maybe you have a question, you might as well go ahead and ask it.
Got a whole bunch of questions. Hold on a moment. Well, you know what, sir? I'm gonna allow you to ask that first question.
Okay. And direct it, if you want it directed at a specific person, I invite you to do that. Otherwise, if it's for everybody.
Okay. Actually, I have three questions, but I'll do the first
Start
one.
Start with the first one.
And this is for everyone up here, and it has to do, I guess, primarily with alcohol, but a lot of this stuff relates. My question would be, would you vote to repeal the 6 a.m. liquor sales law that was passed during this last legislative session? And a side issue with that is, would you also vote to tighten the DWI to include the laws on snowmobiles as well as watercraft? My first question.
Thank you. Who would like to address that?
The first question was related to the law that passed last year. It was signed in November that allows for Class A establishments, gas stations, grocery stores, and so on, to be able to sell alcohol at 6 in the morning now. Would you vote to repeal that?
Who would like to tackle that?
Well,
okay.
I wouldn't change that law. Okay. What was the other part of it?
The other one was about tightening DWI laws to include
snowmobiles and watercraft, that in those laws.
Oh, I thought that those were already enforced, included. Do you know that? They patrol for boats and snowmobiles, I thought.
Okay,
my understanding, and maybe someone else could answer that, is the penalties for someone picked up are not the same as they are if you are picked up DWI with an automobile. That's my understanding.
Do any candidates have a response to that?
Well, I can respond, although my last 9 years were as a detective sergeant, so I wasn't on the road. I don't know exactly how those laws what the penalties are at this time. But you're right. What I do remember is that they are much less. That is something that should be looked at. We're seeing more people being able to afford boats now and snowmobiles. And especially in this state, alcohol goes along with having fun. As far as the question about the 6 a.m., we just talked about alcoholism in this state and binge drinking. What you have now is you have bars open till 2:30 on the weekends. Then they go to somebody's house, and they drink there till who knows how long. Now the next question is going to be, okay, can we wait till 6 o'clock and we can go get some more? Do we want people who've been drinking all night out on the road when now people are starting to go to work? There are children in the streets. It's daytime. These are all things that we have to examine and think about when looking at something like that. I don't think that I wouldn't have a problem with overturning that. But again, rather than just make a snap decision, there's a lot of thought and research that would have to be put into that. But those are just my thoughts.
Would anyone else like to address that question?
You know, the 6 a.m., there are third shift people that do come off of work and want to be able to purchase some alcohol as well. Also, I think we should have a little bit more responsibility for the clerks. If someone comes in who's inebriated at 6 in the morning and wants to buy alcohol, just refuse it. So if they seem like they're totally drunk. But in the same sense, someone who's getting off of work or maybe heading off to a sporting event for a tailgate, I've seen states like Missouri that didn't even have Sunday liquor sales, and there's ways around that, and they finally repealed that. And as far as the snowmobile and the boating, yeah, I think especially on the financial side, if you put those penalties as high as driving drunk, you still could kill someone and harm property, so I would be for that.
I'd like to weigh in and just say that all my decisions will be made in terms of what's the better good. So 6 a.m. liquor laws, it's hard for me to imagine just why you would absolutely have to buy alcohol at 6 a.m. in the morning. You couldn't at least stock up the night before. same with DWI, snowmobiles, and watercraft. Obviously, we want to make these recreational opportunities safe for everyone, and if people are drinking and abusing their vehicles and the system and the trails and the waterways that we all use, that's not in the interest of the greater good.
Okay. Do we have another question?
We do.
Unhealthy foods are not always easy to identify. Do you support more user-friendly and honest labeling on food products by standardizing for ease of comparing the same or similar products? I don't know how much comparing you've done, but sometimes it's pretty difficult.
I would like to answer that one. Yes, I think that food does need to be labeled. Again, if you're looking at things like genetically modified foods, we should know what it is we're putting into our systems. We should know for ourselves and we should know for our families. So I fully support labeling all food products for what's actually in them.
Thank you. Okay.
I would definitely support that, and I would take it a step further. I was talking before about some of the labels that appear on, like, whole grain products. Let's say this is whole grain. Sometimes producers put full labels on there that don't really say whole grain but imply it. And we need to make sure that there's no that there's honesty in advertising as well. But I think that is very key. It certainly helped me become a better consumer at the grocery store. And I think that we probably should look at encouraging that more.
I'd like to concur. I think truth in advertising is very important, and as people are trying to make good, healthy decisions, they need to be empowered with knowledge. So I think absolutely we should be improving our labeling systems. Elizabeth brought up GMOs. I'm also concerned about hormones in our foods. I'm also concerned about where it's produced, because oftentimes we're not aware of where it's coming from. There are many, many issues in terms of our food processes, and I would like to see more transparency in the entire process.
I'm not allowed to go grocery shopping in my house because I don't read any labels. So for my wife's sake, I concur with everybody else.
All right.
May I say one more thing? There's also something else that would need to be on labeling, too, is the amount of medications that are not just pesticides used on fruits and vegetables, but medications that are routinely given to animals, because those stay in the food chain, and there are reasons why we have antibiotic-resistant bacteria out there today. I'm not saying that that's the sole cause of it, but it certainly is something that we need to look at.
We just had this discussion last night at our school board meeting. When I was a kid, which wasn't terribly long ago, but I don't remember a single child in our entire school that had a peanut allergy. And now it seems like every class has at least one or two kids that have a peanut allergy. So I think that there needs to be more research into, like Elizabeth said, genetically modified organisms, genetically modified plants. I find it very suspicious that we have so many peanut allergies popping up, and I'd like to get to the bottom of exactly what is happening.
Jim?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, going back to raw milk, now that you bring that up, if you look at the Amish kids, they don't have very many allergies, if any. And why is that? I think the pasteurized milk kills a lot of the enzymes and friendly bacteria that helps build a person's immunities. And I think that, if I understand it correctly, that there are raw milk associations which have standards, and they do mark their milk, and they do indicate if it's grass-fed or whatever, and whether the animal has been given antibiotics or medications. They try to avoid it as much as possible for the purity. So labeling like that, I think, is real helpful.
Okay, we'll give Elizabeth the last word here.
Sorry, I'll just make it really quick. I certainly wouldn't do anything at this point I don't know how I would come down on the side of the raw milk issue, but I have seen many cases of Clostridium difficile that came from people drinking raw milk. So to say that it's completely harmless is not necessarily the case. That said, as I said, I don't know where I'd come down on it because I don't know enough about it. All I know is my own experiences in seeing outbreaks of these things and having it be traced back to that.
All right. Do we have another question from the audience?
I think you focused quite a bit on some fairly specific public health issues this evening. Maybe if I could ask you to step back a little bit to investment in public health and investment in preventive health. As we move into an accountable care, healthcare delivery system based on results and on evidence, Wisconsin is at the lowest, if not the lowest, investment in public health in the country, probably 49th or 50th. Joan will tell me. What strategies do you have to strengthen that investment in public health, particularly in the sense of providing better preventive, primary, population-based health care? We really are not leading the nation.
Thank you. Yes, Elizabeth.
I'll go. Actually, Minnesota is doing some really interesting things as far as what they're calling healthcare homes, and that doesn't necessarily mean somebody's house, but it means that care providers are going to be concentrated so that you go to a facility and if you need podiatry care because perhaps you have diabetes and there are some foot issues, you get it taken care of there. Electronic health records are supposed to help concentrate all of the information so that people are not repeating expensive tests and things of that nature. So all of these things can help bring down the cost of healthcare, but at the same time, when we're looking at what typical Medicaid reimbursement is in the state of Wisconsin, it's very low historically. And if you're going to get reimbursed $104 for a colonoscopy that would cost an insurance company would pay $5,000 for, your hospital is going to start taking on a lot of debt, and that's not going to get recovered.
Thank you. Mandy, did I see you?
Yes, yeah. Thank you. First of all, I've always said that we need access to quality, affordable health care for everyone. I do think it is one of the foundations of having a healthy community, and if we're going to grow jobs and we're going to keep a strong education system and we're going to have healthy communities overall, we need to make sure that people have access to quality, affordable health care. Particularly prevention. Thank you for bringing up that topic. First of all, I do support the healthcare exchanges that will be implemented by the Affordable Care Act because they are a step in the right direction towards providing quality, affordable care. People will have access to shop for different healthcare options, and I think that's really important, especially people who are already who are falling under the umbrella of lack of services because they are individually employed or work for too small of a business. In addition, I think it's important to support community health programs. We have some excellent community health programs which are already filling the gaps here, particularly the Bridge Community Health Clinic and Family Planning Health Services, among others. I also agree with Elizabeth that we need to make sure that if we are providing public health services, we need to reimburse our providers appropriately so that they have the incentives to continue to provide services for those people. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to respond? All right. Do we have any other questions?
Can you all hear me? Okay. I think somebody mentioned before about the OWIs and DWIs in Wisconsin, that here it's more like kind of joining the club. And Wisconsin, along with a handful of other states, actually the first time OWI offense is not a criminal offense, meaning it doesn't go on your criminal record. You basically just get the fine and get your license revoked. I was just wondering from all of you if you would support some type of legislation to make a first offense a criminal offense, or just your thoughts on first-time OWI offenders.
Before we tackle that, I just want to mention that following this question, this will be our last question, we'll have Karen Katz come up, and I just wanted to notify Karen about that. So, yes, go ahead. Who would like to respond?
Well, I can respond to that. I would say the first OWI offense is extremely costly, first in the fines, then in the loss of driving. Your auto insurance goes up. And anyone that comes to grips with themselves about that, usually, I think, a high percentage don't have a second offense. Now, the ones that do, second time around, it would be a more serious dilemma. I do have to say with Paul that in Wisconsin, we do seem to have that stigma where if you get an OWI, you're part of the club. Well, not if you talk to the individual and what it's done to the family, especially the ones that have really realized they've hit rock bottom. But when it comes to the fines, the penalties, and things to that nature, I think they're quite substantial for the first offense.
Thank you. Other thoughts? Jim?
I'd just say there's some implications if you when you put somebody into the legal system and put something on the record, and if it's a repeat offender, the repeat offenders are the real problems, not the first offense problems, and the multiple high BAC levels. Those are the people who are causing the problems on our highways.
Paul.
And I wouldn't ask Pat to comment on this if it makes him feel awkward, but I think most people, the concept that if you get caught driving drunk your first time, that's your first time driving drunk, I don't think is correct. I think most people that get OWIs probably have driven drunk before, and this is the time that they happen to get caught. So, but as far as criminalizing the first case, again, I think that it would be difficult to do politically. But I am a huge proponent of treatment and a huge proponent of education. I had a friend in high school that got an OWI right out of high school, and he went through the treatment process, and at first he just kind of, it was something he had to do, and he came out of that completely changed after learning about actually working with a counselor. He changed how he lived his life completely, and that was a huge benefit to him.
Thank you, Dennis. Oh, and then Mandy after Dennis.
I just want to build on all these ideas. I think we've all put out good ideas, actually. I also think, though, that when it comes to people who are reoffending for the fifth and sixth time, it's important not to recreate the system for the deviants that are most egregious. For most people, it is a deterrent, the way that it is right now. But it would be, I think, difficult to recreate the entire system just because we are very concerned about those few people who keep reoffending. And we need to find ways to address the issue of the people who keep reoffending, absolutely. But I also think we maybe need to be a little more creative about that. I think education is a great possibility.
Thank you, Dennis.
I just wanted to say that I believe currently the fifth offense brings a felony charge. Fourth? Okay. Fourth offense brings a felony charge. I think there should be some thought into bringing that down a couple of notches, maybe one or two down in second or third offense. As Pat said, a lot of first-time offenders, and Paul said initially, also that most people that are arrested for drunk driving, it's not their first time driving drunk. But I do believe that a lot of people do, from my experience, do learn their lesson after being arrested for the first time drunk driving. But I think we could move that felony offense down from the fourth offense down to third or second, possibly.
Do we have any other thoughts? All right. Well, we'd like to thank you so much, candidates and panelists. And now I'm going to turn the time over to Karen Katz, who's the chair of Healthy Marathon County. Thank you.
Just a few comments. There's a lot of thank yous that should go on for an afternoon like this. We want to thank this facility, obviously. This has been very gracious to host this, and the UW Marathon County, too. We've got the alcohol and other drug partnership. We've got the tobacco free coalition. Healthy eating and active lives, a lot of people that are really involved with Healthy Marathon County, and we want to thank them for that, and their constant vigilance at keeping their message loud and clear in our community. A couple of folks here, we've got Chris Berg for technical assistance, and then Chris McCain for organizing the facility and the refreshments outside. Mostly thank you to all of you fine people, first off, for running for office. Remember, years ago, that was, you know, that was a big issue in our community to just get people interested in running. So thank you so much, and for having it on your heart to represent people. Thanks for that. Thanks for taking time out of your day and being informed. I think on behalf of Healthy Marathon County, it's exciting to spend 2 hours talking about this stuff. We talk about it a lot, and so we're just thrilled to have people in our audience that are passionate about these topics. And thanks again.